If you're an RIA or looking to become one, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. It's no mystery why they're the number one choice for RIAs who want to be the ultimate solution for their clients. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.
All right, let's jump into today's political landscape.
Sounds good.
We're diving deep into electoralvote.com's analysis.
Oh, cool.
Some pretty major events.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've got the fallout from President Biden's pardon of his son Hunter Biden.
Right.
A pretty curious crypto deal involving the incoming Trump administration.
Uh-huh.
And the challenges that Mike Johnson's going to be facing as the new Speaker of the House.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're not just going to scratch the surface, you know. Right. We're really trying to dig into like the why, the how, and the what it all means.
I like it. So we're like putting on our political detective hats and looking for those clues that might like point to some bigger trends or implications for the future.
Exactly. And trust me, there are some surprises along the way.
Okay.
For instance, we're going to uncover some pretty intriguing parallels between a presidential pardon that was issued today and one from nearly 50 years ago. And you might be surprised to hear that a seemingly minor crypto deal could actually overshadow this whole Hunter Biden story in terms of its potential impact.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are the kinds of connections that can easily get lost, you know.
Oh, for sure.
In the daily news cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
But they can be super revealing if you know where to look.
Absolutely. All right. So let's dive right in, starting with this whole Hunter Biden pardon.
Okay.
Now, this has been a hot topic, right? And Electoral Vote breaks down some of the main reactions and arguments surrounding it.
Okay.
One argument that's been going around is that this pardon is going to tarnish President Biden's legacy.
Oh, interesting. It's an interesting argument, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, the idea that a president would prioritize how historians will judge him decades from now over like his own son's well-being.
It does seem a little far-fetched, doesn't it?
A little, yeah.
Like, you know, any president's just sitting in the Oval Office being like, well, I better not do this.
Right.
Because it might look bad in a history book 50 years from now.
Yeah.
Right.
Beyond the practicality of the argument, there's also the question of whether it's even accurate.
Okay.
Like, if you think back to Gerald Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon back in 1974.
Right.
At the time, it was wildly unpopular.
Oh, yeah.
And people thought it would, like, completely destroy Ford's presidency.
Sure.
But looking back, some historians actually argue that it was a necessary step to, you know, move the country past Watergate and start the process of healing.
So you're saying that what seems like a legacy-tarnishing decision in the moment could actually be seen as, like, a courageous act of leadership down the road.
Exactly. It's all about perspective and the long view of history.
Yeah.
We just don't have enough distance yet to really judge what the full impact of Biden's decision is.
Yeah, that's a great point. And speaking of Ford's pardon of Nixon, there are some interesting parallels to Biden's pardon of Hunter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Both pardons were incredibly broad and unspecific.
Okay.
Essentially blanket protections against any potential federal offenses.
Right.
So for Nixon, the pardon covered any crimes he might have committed related to Watergate.
Mm.
And in Hunter Biden's case, it covers like a span of 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
Which is very different from most presidential pardons, which tend to be for, you know, very specific offenses.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So what does this tell us about Biden's motivations? Mm-hmm. Why would he issue such a sweeping pardon?
Well, Electoral Vote suggests that this recent Cash Patel story might have been like a tipping point for Biden.
Right.
Remember, Patel was a Trump loyalist
who
was facing some pretty serious prosecution.
Right.
But the charges were eventually dropped when Trump got back into office.
Yeah. And there was speculation that if Trump won again, he might use the Justice Department to go after, like, his political enemies.
Right.
Including the Biden.
Oh, exactly. So Biden might have issued this pardon as a preemptive measure, like, to protect his son from potential politically motivated prosecution.
Right.
Under, like, a future Trump administration.
Right. That's a pretty bold move.
It is.
And it raises some questions about Biden's confidence in the justice system.
I see what you mean,
on one hand, he's saying he believes in the rule of law.
Right.
And that no one is above the law.
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, he's issuing this pardon that suggests he doesn't trust the incoming administration to uphold those principles.
Yeah, it is kind of a contradiction.
Right.
And it feeds into this idea
right.
that there's like two systems of justice.
Right.
You know, one for the politically connected
right.
and one for everybody else.
It's a sentiment that we see in some of the commentary around this pardon. Slate writer Mark Joseph Stern, for example,
okay.
argues that if the system is indeed rigged, as this pardon seems to suggest,
right.
that Biden should be using his pardon power more broadly
okay.
to address other injustices.
Interesting. And how so?
He specifically mentions commuting the sentences of people on federal death row.
Wow. Well,
he argues that this would be a much more meaningful use of the pardon power.
Right.
Given Biden's, you know, opposition to capital punishment.
Yeah, it's a provocative argument for sure.
It is.
Makes you wonder how Biden will choose to, like, wield this power for the rest of his term.
Absolutely. Keep in mind, though,
okay.
Biden has already issued a record number of pardons
oh, really?
For marijuana possession.
Wow. Okay.
So in a way, he's already using his pardon power
uh-huh.
to address a perceived injustice, at least on a limited scale.
Right.
Right.
It seems like this pardon issue is really showing us some cracks in our justice system.
Yeah.
And it's raising those fundamental questions about fairness and accountability.
Absolutely. But let's shift gears for a moment.
Okay.
And talk about a story that, on the surface, might seem unrelated.
Okay.
But it actually touches on some similar themes.
Okay.
Of power, influence, and potential corruption.
You're talking about the Trump family's crypto venture, right?
Yes.
World Liberty Financial.
It's about WLF.
Yeah.
It's been struggling.
Has it?
To put it mildly.
Okay.
But then suddenly, this massive investment from Justin Sun appears out of thin air.
Oh, wow.
Sun's a crypto entrepreneur known for, well, let's just say he enjoys the spotlight.
Okay.
Right?
Remember when he bought that banana duct taped to a wall for $6 million?
I do.
And then ate it.
Classic Sun.
Yeah.
So why would he invest $30 million in a floundering project like WLF?
That is the question, isn't it?
It is.
The $30 million question. And this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
Electoral Vote points out that the way WLF is structured,
right,
this investment actually translates into like a direct $16.5 million payout to the Trumps.
Wait, so this wasn't just an investment in the company?
Right.
It was like a direct payment to the Trump family?
It certainly looks that way.
Okay.
And that raises all sorts of red flags.
Right.
Like, is this a genuine show of support for Trump?
Right.
A savvy business deal?
Right.
Or something, you know, a little more nefarious?
Okay.
Is this a bribe?
Right.
Disguised as an investment?
Yeah. I'm dying to know more.
I know.
But before we do,
yeah,
let's just take a quick step back.
Okay.
And explain what WLF is for those who might not be familiar.
Right.
So World Liberty Financial, or WLF, is the Trump family's attempt to create their own cryptocurrency. However, it's not actually a functional currency yet.
Yeah.
You can't actually use it to buy anything.
So it's more of a speculative investment at this point.
Right.
Something you buy hoping it will increase in value later on.
Exactly. And to be honest, it hasn't been doing very well.
Yep.
So the fact that someone like Justin Sun, who's known for being, you know, a shrewd investor,
right,
would pour $30 million into this,
right,
is definitely eyebrow raising.
It is, for sure.
So let's unpack this a little bit further.
Yeah.
Why would Sun, a supposedly savvy investor,
uh-huh,
put so much money into a struggling, non-functional cryptocurrency?
Well, there are a few possibilities.
Okay.
Electoral Vote lays out some interesting scenarios.
Okay.
Like, it could be a show of support for Trump.
Right.
A way to curry favor with the incoming administration.
Yeah.
Or it could be, like, a publicity stunt.
Right.
A way for Sun to generate buzz,
uh-huh,
for himself and his other ventures.
Yeah.
Or it could be something a lot more calculated.
Okay.
Perhaps a way to influence policy decisions.
Right.
Or even secure a pardon for himself.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
A pardon?
Yeah.
Why would Sun need a pardon?
Well, he's facing securities fraud charges.
Oh.
From the SEC.
Oh, I see.
So it's possible this investment's a way to get in good with the incoming president.
Right.
Someone who could potentially help him out of a legal jam.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a pretty serious accusation.
It is.
And it makes you wonder why this story isn't getting more attention.
Right.
I mean, if this is really a bribe disguised as an investment.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a major scandal?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It's definitely a story worth watching, though.
Absolutely.
And it really highlights the, like, often murky intersection of money, power, and politics, especially in the crypto world,
right,
which is still relatively unregulated.
Okay, so we've got potential corruption brewing in the crypto world.
Yeah.
And now let's dive into another potential political pressure cooker.
Okay.
The House of Representatives.
Okay.
Mike Johnson's stepping into the role of Speaker of the House.
Uh-huh.
And let's just say he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah, to say he's inherited a challenging situation is an understatement.
Right. With a razor-thin majority and a deeply divided Republican caucus,
yeah,
Johnson is going to have to be like a master negotiator and strategist,
right,
to get anything done.
It's almost like he's been tasked with herding cats.
Totally.
And not just any cats, but like a particularly feisty and independent bunch.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Thanks. Because just like herding cats.
Yeah.
Managing a group of strong-willed individuals,
right,
with competing priorities and agendas is like no easy feat.
No, it's not. Right. And to make matters even more complicated,
yeah,
he's lost 3 GOP members right off the bat.
Really?
Yeah, Matt Gaetz resigned.
Wow.
And Elise Stefanik and Mike Waltz left to join the Trump administration.
Okay. So where does that leave things numbers-wise?
So that leaves the House split 217 to 215.
Wow, okay.
With the Democrats holding, surprisingly, a lot of power to influence the agenda.
Huh.
Electoral vote calls the situation 217 Joe Manchins, suggesting that even a small number of dissenting Republicans,
right,
can effectively hold Johnson hostage.
I see. So who are these factions that Johnson has to deal with?
Yeah.
What are their, like, motivations, and how might they impact his ability to actually govern effectively?
So let's start with the Freedom Caucus.
Okay.
The most conservative wing of the Republican Party.
Right.
They're known for their hardline stance on fiscal issues,
right,
their desire for deep spending cuts, and their willingness to obstruct legislation that doesn't align with their ideology.
So they have a pretty significant amount of power within the caucus.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
And they're not afraid to use it.
No, they're not. And they've got some key players in strategic position.
Like who?
Representatives Massey, Norman, and Roy,
right,
all Freedom Caucus. Hardliners,
okay,
sit on the powerful House Rules Committee.
Right.
This committee controls which bills even make it to the floor for a vote. So they can basically kill any legislation they don't like. Wow.
Right there in committee.
Okay.
So even with this slim majority, Johnson can't afford to alienate the Freedom Caucus.
Right.
He needs their votes to pass anything.
Yeah.
But their demands for deep cuts are likely to create conflict with other factions within the party.
Of course. Yeah.
Right.
Like who?
Take the SALT Caucus, for example.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
These are Republicans primarily from high-tax states.
Right.
Like California, New York, New Jersey.
I think so.
They're pushing to expand the state and local tax deduction,
okay,
or the SALT deduction,
right,
which would benefit, you know, their wealthy constituents.
Right.
However, this would also increase the federal deficit.
Right.
Something the Freedom Caucus vehemently opposes.
Of course.
Right. So we've got the Freedom Caucus pushing for spending cuts,
uh-huh,
and the SALT Caucus pushing for tax breaks.
Right.
That could increase the deficit.
Yeah.
How is Johnson supposed to reconcile those competing interests? That's the million-dollar question. And we haven't even talked about the other factions yet.
Right. Yeah.
It's like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube,
yeah,
where each side's constantly shifting.
All right. Well, let's try to unscramble this Rubik's Cube.
Okay.
We've covered the Freedom Caucus and the SALT Caucus.
Right.
What other factions are in play,
mm-hmm,
and what are their potential impacts,
yeah,
on Johnson's ability to govern?
Well, there's the Ambition Caucus.
Okay.
Which is made up of those House members who are already looking at higher office.
Right.
They'll be spending a lot of time on the campaign trail,
uh-huh,
which means they might be absent for votes.
Right.
You know, further complicating Johnson's effort to maintain control.
And it's not just about the number of votes.
Right.
It's also about where those missing votes are coming from.
Oh, I see.
Right. Like, if a representative from a swing district,
mm-hmm,
is off campaigning in a different state,
right,
that could leave their seat vulnerable.
Yeah.
In a special election,
mm-hmm,
potentially tipping the balance of power in the House.
Yeah, it's a very delicate balancing act.
It is.
Then you have the Defense Hawk Caucus.
Right.
The Republicans who are still pushing for a strong military presence around the world,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, continued support for Ukraine.
Right.
They're likely to clash with those who want to cut spending on defense.
Right.
Setting up another potential battle within the Republican ranks.
And with the war in Ukraine still ongoing, that's a debate that's likely to be front and center in the coming months.
It is. Then you have the deficit caucus.
Right.
A group of fiscal conservatives who are laser focused on reducing the national debt.
Right.
They'll be scrutinizing every piece of legislation for its impact on the deficit.
Yeah.
Which could put a damper on some of Trump's more ambitious and expensive plans.
Right. So the deficit caucus will be acting like a fiscal watchdog, making sure that any new spending is offset by cuts elsewhere.
Yeah.
That could create some tension with those who want to increase spending on things like, you know, defense or infrastructure.
Exactly. It's this constant tug of war.
Right.
And to add another layer of complexity, there's the actuarial caucus.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a not so subtle reminder that several members of Congress are getting up there in years.
Right.
With such tight margins, even a temporary absence due to illness could have significant consequences.
It's like Johnson is walking a tightrope with all these different factions pulling him in different directions.
It is.
It really makes you appreciate the skills of someone like Nancy Pelosi, who managed to maintain control of the House with similar razor-thin margins.
Right.
You know, electoral vote really drives this point home, comparing Johnson's task to herding cats, which, let's face it, is never easy.
It's a great analogy, and it underscores the immense pressure that Johnson's under to keep his caucus unified and deliver on that Republican agenda.
Yeah. The question is, can he pull it off?
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
But one thing's for sure,
it's
going to be a wild ride.
It certainly will.
So far, we've covered the fallout from the Hunter Biden, the interesting crypto deal involving the incoming Trump administration.
Right.
And the, you know, big challenges facing this new Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
We've delved into some pretty complex issues.
We have.
But I think it's important to kind of pause for a moment.
Okay.
And ask you, what are your takeaways from all this?
Right, because we're not just presenting information here.
Right.
We're trying to make sense of it together.
Yeah.
Connect the dots and see the bigger picture.
I like that.
What stands out to you as particularly significant or surprising?
Well, for me, it's this recurring theme of consequences.
Okay.
Both intended and unintended.
Right.
The Hunter Biden pardon, for example.
Yeah.
Might have been intended to protect the president's son. But it also, like, raise these questions about fairness and impartiality in our justice system.
Right.
And the Trump crypto investment, if you can even call it that, could have some really far-reaching implications for the incoming administration, potentially exposing them to accusations of bribery and corruption.
Yeah. And then there's the precarious state of the House.
Right.
Where the balance of power is like on a knife's edge.
It is.
Right.
The decisions made by Mike Johnson.
Right.
And his caucus will have, you know, ripple effects.
Yeah.
Throughout the government and beyond.
It's a lot to process.
It is.
And it highlights how important it is to stay informed and engaged.
Yeah.
In the political process.
Absolutely.
Right.
Especially now.
Yeah.
We're living in a time of unprecedented political division and uncertainty.
Yes.
And it's like more important than ever to be aware of those forces that are at play and how they might shape our future.
And to be, you know, critical thinkers. Questioning assumptions, seeking out diverse perspectives.
Right.
Don't just accept the narratives that are being presented.
Right.
Right.
Dig deeper, ask tough questions.
Yeah.
And challenge those biases.
Well said.
Thanks.
And on that note, let's move on to the second part of our deep dive, where we'll continue to explore these stories in more detail.
Sounds good.
And try to understand their potential implications for the future.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Me too. Picking up where we left off, let's dig a little deeper into these House factions.
Okay.
You might be surprised to learn how much power these groups have.
Right.
Even within, you know, a seemingly unified party.
It is fascinating to see how these internal divisions can be just as impactful as, like, the conflicts between the two major parties.
Absolutely. And understanding these dynamics can really help you make sense of the legislative process. And even predict how certain bills might fare.
Right.
For example, the Freedom Caucus, with their emphasis on fiscal conservatism
and
limited government, they're going to have a lot of influence on anything related to spending or taxes.
Right. And their influence extends beyond, you know, just the number of votes that they control.
Right.
As you mentioned, they have members on the House Rules Committee.
Exactly.
Giving them the power to block legislation before it even gets to the floor for a vote.
Yes. Representatives Massey, Norman, and Roy, they're all Freedom Caucus members on that committee.
Right.
And they're known for their strict adherence to conservative principles.
Right.
And their willingness to, you know, stand their ground, even if it means gridlock.
So it sounds like any legislation that involves, like, increased spending,
yeah,
even for things that most people would consider essential, like defense,
yeah,
or infrastructure,
right,
is going to face a real uphill battle.
Yes, it will. And this is where we see the potential for conflict,
right,
with those other factions, like the SALT Caucus.
The SALT Caucus.
This group is primarily concerned with the interests of their constituents,
right,
in those high-tax states.
You mentioned earlier that they're pushing for an expansion of the SALT deduction.
Uh-huh.
Can you remind us what that is?
Yeah, sure.
And why it's such a big issue?
Of course. So the SALT deduction stands for state and local tax deduction.
Okay.
And it allows taxpayers to deduct,
right,
certain state and local taxes,
right,
from their federal income taxes.
Right.
So this mostly benefits taxpayers in high tax states,
right,
who often end up paying a lot more in federal taxes.
So the SALT Caucus wants to expand this to provide more tax relief,
right,
for their constituents.
Exactly. But here's the problem.
Yeah.
Expanding the SALT deduction,
right,
would probably increase the federal deficit.
Right.
Which is something the Freedom Caucus, who are all about fiscal responsibility, you know,
right,
they vehemently oppose that.
Yeah. It sounds like we have a classic clash of priorities.
We do.
Right. So the SALT Caucus wants to prioritize tax relief for their constituents,
uh-huh,
while the Freedom Caucus wants to prioritize, you know, deficit reduction.
Exactly. How is Johnson supposed to make both sides happy?
Yeah, it's a delicate balancing act.
It is.
He needs to appease both.
Uh-huh.
Maybe by finding, you know, compromise solutions,
yeah,
or focusing on areas where they agree.
Right. Perhaps by, like, finding spending cuts in other areas.
Right.
That could offset the revenue lost from expanding the SALT deduction.
Right. Yeah. But that's easier said than done.
It is.
Especially in this current political climate,
yeah,
where compromise is seen as a weakness.
Unfortunately. And don't forget those other factions Johnson has to work with.
Right. You mentioned the Ambition Caucus earlier.
Mm-hmm.
These House members who are already looking ahead to bigger and better things.
Right.
How might their ambitions impact Johnson's ability to govern?
Well, as you can imagine, someone focused on running for Senate or governor,
yeah,
might not be as dedicated to the daily grind of the House. They might be absent for votes,
mm,
or more concerned with, you know, their own image,
right,
than actually advancing the party's agenda.
Right. They might be more likely to, you know, score political points, or appeal to their base,
right,
than to, like, find common ground or work across the aisle.
Exactly. And mm-hmm, this creates a real headache for Johnson.
Yeah.
Especially with such a tiny majority.
Yeah.
Every vote counts.
Right.
And if even a small number of members are off campaigning, mm-hmm, or focused on their own political ambitions,
yeah,
it can make it really difficult to get anything passed.
And as we talked about before, it's not just about the number of votes.
Right.
It's about where those missing votes are coming from.
Yeah.
If a representative from a swing district is off campaigning in a different state,
right,
that could leave their seat vulnerable.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's a constant game of political chess.
It is.
Johnson has to, like, think several moves ahead,
right,
and anticipate those consequences of every decision.
Okay, so we have the Freedom Caucus focused on spending cuts.
Mm-hmm.
We have the SALT Caucus pushing for tax relief.
Right.
And the Ambition Caucus.
Yeah.
Possibly causing problems with their focus on higher office.
What about those other factions we discussed, like the Defense Hawks and the Deficit Caucus?
Well, the Defense Hawk Caucus,
yeah,
is going to be pushing for increased military spending.
Right.
Especially with this war in Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
They believe in having a strong military presence around the world.
Right.
And are willing to invest in defense.
Which, of course, could put them at odds with the Deficit Caucus.
Exactly.
Right.
The folks who want to reduce the national debt.
Yeah.
They're going to be wary of any new spending.
Right.
Even for things that seem as essential as national defense.
Yeah. So Johnson will have to find a way to balance those concerns of the defense hawks,
uh-huh,
with the the demands of the deficit caucus.
Right. It's a tightrope walk.
It is.
With no easy answers.
And then there's that actuarial caucus.
Right. A group defined not by ideology, but just by age.
Right. And while they might not be a like a formal caucus.
Right.
The fact that a good number of Congress members
yeah.
are in their 70s and 80s
right.
adds another layer of unpredictability
right.
to this whole situation.
It's a reminder that, you know, health issues or unexpected absences
yeah.
or even the passing of a member could have a major impact on this balance of power.
Especially with such a small margin.
Right. Yeah, it's a sobering thought.
It is.
But one that Johnson has to keep in mind.
Absolutely.
As he tries to navigate this political landscape.
Yeah, it sounds like Johnson's task is like trying to herd a bunch of cats.
It does.
With very different personalities and agendas.
It's going to require a special set of skills.
Right.
Diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
Persuasion.
Yeah.
Strategic thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit of luck.
And a thick skin. Because no matter what he does, he's going to be criticized.
He will.
It just comes with the territory.
It does.
Being Speaker of the House is one of the most powerful and most challenging positions in government.
Yeah.
And with the House being so divided,
right.
the stakes are even higher.
So we've talked about the challenges Johnson faces in managing his caucus.
Right.
All the different factions and the potential for, you know, gridlock or even chaos.
Yeah.
But let's shift gears for a second and talk about the Democrats.
All right.
What role might they play in this?
Well, with such a slim majority, the Democrats have a surprising amount of leverage.
Okay.
They could potentially work with, like, moderate Republicans
right.
to pass certain legislation.
Uh-huh.
Or to block bills that they don't like.
It's interesting to think that in a closely divided House, the minority party could have such a significant impact.
It really is. It's a reminder that, you know, power dynamics can shift really quickly in politics.
Yeah.
And that even when one party seems to have control, the other can still have influence.
So it sounds like the Democrats, even though they're in the minority, could play a crucial role in the next 2 years.
They could be the kingmakers.
Right.
Deciding what passes and what fails.
They could be a force for compromise.
Right.
Urging both sides to find common ground.
They could.
Or they could be obstructionists.
Right.
Using their leverage to block the entire Republican agenda.
It'll be very interesting to see
what
strategy they choose.
Right.
And how this all plays out.
Yeah. It's a fascinating time to be following American politics.
It is.
The stakes are high. The players are unpredictable.
Uh-huh.
And the outcome is far from certain.
We've covered a lot in this deep dive.
We have.
From presidential pardons to crypto deals.
Right.
To the complex power dynamics in the House.
Yeah. What are your takeaways from all this?
For me, it's the realization that even seemingly small things,
right.
like a pardon or a crypto investment,
yeah.
can have these ripple effects
yeah.
that we might not fully grasp at the time.
Right.
And it's a reminder that politics is rarely about, you know, clear-cut choices
right.
or easy solutions.
Right.
It's messy.
Yeah.
It's complex.
Yeah.
And it's often unpredictable.
It's like a giant game of three-dimensional chess.
Exactly.
With multiple players and hidden agendas.
It's constantly shifting alliances.
Right. Exactly. And it requires a certain level of engagement and critical thinking.
Right.
To even begin to make sense of it all.
Which is why these deep dives are so important.
They are.
We need to step back from the daily headlines.
Right.
And really, like, analyze these events that are shaping our world.
Right. It's about connecting those dots.
Yeah.
Understanding the context, seeing the bigger picture.
Absolutely. And engaging in these thoughtful discussions.
Yeah.
Challenging assumptions.
Right.
Considering different perspectives.
Speaking of different perspectives,
yeah.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this comment from Electoral Vote about Mike Johnson and his ability to manage the House.
Right.
They compared his task to herding cats.
Yeah, good analogy.
Which we've talked about.
Right.
Is not easy.
It's not.
Do you think Johnson has what it takes to succeed?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And it's honestly too early to tell.
Okay.
Johnson is a bit of an unknown
right.
on the national stage.
Yeah.
He's only been in Congress for a few years.
Yeah.
And this is his first real leadership position.
Right. So he's kind of a wild card.
In a way, yes. But he is a very shrewd politician.
Okay.
Who rose through the ranks quickly.
Uh-huh.
And he's known for his conservative views.
Yeah.
His ability to build consensus.
Right.
And his calm demeanor.
So he might just have what it takes.
He might.
To navigate these waters.
He might, but it's going to be tough.
Right. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
And no guarantees of success.
Well, that's politics for you.
It is.
Always full of surprises.
And twists and turns.
Exactly.
Which is what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah. Okay, so we've explored the Hunter Biden pardon,
uh-huh.
the Trump crypto investment,
right,
and those challenges facing Mike Johnson as the new speaker.
Yeah.
We've gotten into some complex issues.
We have.
But I think it's important to, you know, pause and ask.
Yeah.
What are your takeaways from this?
For me, it's that recurring theme of consequences.
Right.
Both intended and unintended.
Yeah.
The Hunter Biden pardon, for example,
yeah.
was probably intended to protect his son.
Uh-huh.
But it also raised all these questions about fairness in the justice system.
Right, exactly.
And that Trump crypto investment, if
yeah.
we can even call it that,
right.
could have serious implications for the incoming administration.
Right.
Potentially opening them up to accusations of bribery and corruption.
And then there's that House of Representatives
Fire.
Where the balance of power is just teetering on the edge.
Right. The decisions made by Mike Johnson and his caucus
yeah.
are going to have ripple effects throughout the government and beyond.
Mm-hmm. It really highlights the importance of staying informed.
Absolutely.
And engaged in the political process.
Yeah, especially now. We're
yeah.
living in a time of, you know, unprecedented division and uncertainty.
Right.
And it's more important than ever to be aware of those forces at play.
Right. And to be critical thinkers, nice. Questioning assumptions,
right.
seeking out diverse perspectives.
Yes. Don't just accept those narratives that you're given.
Exactly.
Dig deeper, ask those tough questions, and challenge your own biases.
Well said.
Thank you.
And on that note, let's move on to the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
Where we'll continue to explore these stories
yeah.
and try to understand what they mean for the future.
Looking forward to it.
You know, it's kind of wild how these seemingly random events,
right?
A crypto deal, a new speaker,
uh-huh.
all tie together to tell this story of where we are in politics right now.
Yeah, it's like we're piecing together a puzzle, right?
Yeah.
Each piece might not seem that important on its own.
Right.
But when you put them all together, you start to see the big picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Those underlying patterns,
huh.
the potential consequences, it all comes into focus.
And sometimes those consequences are bigger than we think they are at the time.
Totally.
It's like, oh.
Kind of reminds me of that butterfly effect.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one tiny wing flap in Brazil.
Right.
Tornado in Texas.
Exactly. So we're all butterfly watchers in a way.
In a way, yeah.
Trying to spot those flaps.
Right.
That could have big implications down the road.
Exactly. And that's where critical thinking comes in.
Right.
We need to connect the dots.
Yeah.
See the potential links.
Uh-huh.
And anticipate the consequences.
Because sometimes those consequences are, you know, huge.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about power shifts, policy changes.
Right.
Even threats to democracy itself.
It's a lot to keep track of.
It is.
But it's important. Because at the end of the day,
yeah.
we're not just watching this all happen.
Right.
We're participants.
Yeah.
Our votes,
mm-hmm.
our voices,
right.
our engagement, it all matters.
That's why these deep dives are so crucial.
They are.
We need to understand the issues.
Right.
Analyze what's happening.
Yeah.
And talk about like what it means for us as a society.
Maybe we couldn't agree more.
It's about, you know, empowering ourselves
yeah.
with knowledge, with the ability to think critically
yeah.
and with, you know, a sense of responsibility for
yeah.
the future of our democracy.
Well said.
So to bring it all together,
uh-huh.
we've looked at these three stories. A crypto deal and a new House speaker.
Yeah.
And they've shown us a lot about where American politics is right now.
We've seen a president, you know, trying to figure out the limits of his power.
Right.
An incoming administration facing some serious accusations.
Yeah.
And a new speaker who's struggling to keep control.
Yeah. And all of this is happening
yeah.
against this backdrop of, like, deep division and uncertainty.
It is.
It's a lot, but it's also a reminder
yeah.
that we're living through a really important moment in history.
We are.
So what does it all mean?
Right.
What's the takeaway for our listeners?
I think the most important thing is to stay informed, engaged, and critical.
Yeah.
Don't just take things at face value.
Right.
Do your research, ask questions, and challenge what you think you know.
Yeah, the future of our democracy depends on it.
I think that's a great place to end.
I agree. Stay curious, stay engaged, and keep those critical thinking skills sharp.
Absolutely.
And until next time,
yeah,
keep diving deep.